No Room for Angels by Arthur Sheridan.
The truck's wheels are broken. It's hard to push up and down under the table. Tim plays with his teddy. He used to be my teddy, but when Tim was born, Ma took it off me and gave it to him. He calls it little Johnny after me. Ma irons her skirt. She looks angry. She takes quick puffs on her cigarette. Her hands jerk as she irons. She swigs from a bottle of Smirnoff. I don't like it when she drinks. Ma says it makes her happy, but I don't think it does. Tim follows me everywhere. He's not happy with his teddy now. He wants my truck. It's my truck. I tell him to go away and play over there. He won't go. I push him. He just sits there with his teddy. I turn away from him. He calls me name. I don't answer. He asks for a go with the truck. He says, go on. It's my truck. I feel his nails as he squeezes them into my arm, both hands. I let out a roar to get him into trouble with Ma, much louder than was needed for the pain of the pinch. She spills her vodka. Her eyes are dark and swollen. Oh no. Run, Timmy, I say, run out the front door. Tim is out the door and down the hall with his teddy. Ma unplugs the urn and picks it up. I feel a bit sick. The thumping starts. I move into the middle, under the table, and pull the chairs in with me. She reaches under the table and pushes the urn towards me. She can't reach. Gets more angry. She pulls the chairs out of the way. The side of the urn burns her arm as she pulls the chairs. She lets out a roar. I'm for it now. I look out into the hall. Tim is on a chair. He has the front door open and he's out. I make a run for it. I'm running down the hall. The vodka slows her takeoff. I run out the door. She throws the urn out after me. It lands beside me. And yous can fucking stay out, she shouts. The door bangs shut. Timmy waits out in the dark. Cars go by. I walk up to him. Little Johnny's tired. I take his hand. The thumping in my chest slows. I pant. I knock on the door. Mr. Murray answers. He looks at us. Not again, he says. Mary, he calls. She comes out. We can hear the television on. Come in, she says. We stand at the bottom of the stairs. Mr. Murray is outside. I can hear him banging on the door. He calls me, Ma. She doesn't answer. Teresa and Michael come to the top of the stairs. They're in their pyjamas. They're not staying in my bed, says Michael. Can I sleep with you, Ma? Says Teresa. She looks excited. Okay, says Mrs. Murray. Go back to bed, she says. She ushers us into the kitchen. We sit at the table and wait. She puts two bowls in front of us. We know what's coming. She fills them with cocoa pops. Ma never buys cocoa pops. She pours in the milk. I dig in. Tim stares at the big fruit bowl in the middle of the table. Eat up, she says. Can I have that? Asked Tim. He points at an orange. Of course you can. Tim takes the orange like it's a toy. He laps up his cocoa pops. They turn the milk chocolatey. I like cocoa pops. Ma gives us toast sometimes. And sometimes we get nothing. Mr. Murray comes in. He raises his eyes up to heaven. Her eyes nod. Up yous go, she says. You can both sleep in Teresa's room. I pick up me bowl and drink the brown milk. It's sweet. We make our way up the stairs and into Teresa's room. The carpet smells nice. It's soft and warm under our feet. Mrs. Murray comes in with another pillow. I sleep in one end of the bed and Tim sleeps in the other. Mrs. Murray turns the light off but leaves the door open. Light from the landing spills in, lighting up the pictures of fluffy animals on the wall. There's one of a fluffy puppy like the one in the toilet paper ad. I stare at it. My eyes get tired. Tim hangs onto his orange and his teddy. Why can't we live at the Murrays all the time, he asks. Why is right? Mr. Murray puts on his tie as he bites into his toast. Mrs. Murray shakes Cheerios into our bowls. She makes a big deal of this. Teresa and Michael love Cheerios and Mrs. Murray thinks it's a big treat for all of us. I'd rather have Cocoa Pops, but I don't tell her. She looks so happy. Mr. Murray kisses her on the cheek and runs out. It's nice. Tim hugs his orange and his teddy. Would you like to eat that? Says Mrs. Murray. Tim shakes his head. He treats the orange like a pet, rubbing its head. Mrs. Murray puts on Teresa and Michael's coats and school bags and says she'll take us down to the school. She gives me and Tim jam sandwiches for lunchtime. I like Mrs. Murray's jam sandwiches. She nearly always gives us blackcurrant.
There's nothing but football on our telly on Tuesdays. He likes the football. Football and a few cans and he's in heaven. He roars at the telly when they miss a shot and when they score. Oh, he really gets the fire in his belly at the football. His eyes do be bulging. It's the only time he seems to feel anything. He just sits around the rest of the time. A dead look in his eyes. A broken man. I blame the orphanage. He doesn't like to talk about his childhood. I can never get anything out of him. Just says he wants to forget about it. Maybe that's why he drinks. He's a fine big man, physically strong. That's what attracted me to him. But his soul is dead. I didn't see that then. Still, he's happy enough with his Sky Sports and his bag of cans. Probably would have been different if we had have had kids. They'd brighten up the house, bring a bit of life into it. We couldn't have kids. I don't know which one of us it was, but he wouldn't go down to the doctors for tests and, well, I wouldn't go on my own. What if it turned out I was all right and it was him all the time? Might make me bitter. Turn me against him, break us up. It was bad enough going for the adoption. We had to go before the board. Now, he dressed up all right, he looked great, but he had a couple of pints before he went in to steady his nerves, and the woman who asked most of the questions looked down her nose at us anyway. She sniffed the air when he came in. "Have you been drinking?" she asked in her snobby voice. He grunted, "Yeah." She went on with her questions. "And where are you employed?" she asked. "He works for the council," I answered for him. She ignored me and addressed him. "And what do you do in the council?" she asked. Oh, I tensed. I hoped he wouldn't say it. He did. "I work in the sewers," he said. I knew he'd say it. Why couldn't he have said drainage? He knew the effect that always had. It was like he didn't want the child. She certainly wasn't impressed. Oh, they came out and looked at the house, but it was a waste of time. A few weeks later, we got the letter. Refused. I let him have it that night, that he didn't really want kids, that he was selfish, and that he didn't really love me. Well, that hurt him. I could see it in his eyes. He always had hurt in his eyes, but this was different. I think he was afraid I was going to leave him. Afraid he'd be alone in the world. He had the dreams that night.
We walk down to the school. It's a nice morning, but I don't feel good. Other kids are noisy and wrestle and play chasing along the way. Me and Tim are quiet. Anto comes along. Anto's in me class. He knows all about football. He asked me did I watch the game last night. I tell him I didn't. He says he watched it with his dad. I'd like to watch the football with my dad. Anto only has one dad, but me and Tim have loads of dads. None of them watched the football with me, though. Mostly they drank with Ma and went upstairs. Ma was happy then, but not happy with us. Sometimes she'd make us play outside, even when it was raining. I don't like playing in the rain, but when I tried to get back in, the door would be locked. Anto says United were playing. I asked who they were playing against. He says Liverpool, of course. It's the end of the league. His dad follows United. He follows United too. One time, his dad brought him to England on the boat to see United play. He wore his jersey into school on Monday to show me. He said it was nice, but I didn't care. It was a red jersey. I like red. Anto talks about his dad a lot. I don't want to hear, but I wonder what they've done together. Anto shouldn't tell me about his dad all the time. I'd like to mush me jam sandwiches into Anto's jersey. That'd be funny. The teacher sits us down in the room and calls the roll. I stare out the window at the sun. I can see the mountains far away with its forest and the Hellfire Club. I wish I lived in the mountains in the forest. I'd be like the Indians in a tent. The roll is over. It'll start soon. I know it'll start. Take out your homework, the teacher says. I've no books. The teacher looks at our sums first. One by one he goes through us till he gets to me. Where's your copybook, he asks. It's at home. I don't like to tell him. What was the last time? Your mother wouldn't let you in? He laughs. Some of the kids laugh. You're such a liar, he says. I suppose the dog ate your pencils too. All the kids laugh. Anto is laughing. Anto's me friend. But fuck Anto. Still English and Irish to go.
He used to have the dreams all the time when we first got married, but then they went away. They returned that night and for a few weeks later. I had to pity him. I used to ask him what the dreams were about, but he'd never say. Nothing, he'd mutter. I can't remember me dreams. I wonder. He used to talk in them. Stand by the bed, he'd roar. And then he'd cry like a little boy. Well, I couldn't take it, I'll tell you. I started to wake him out of them. He'd look shocked when he'd wake and then glad I'd woke him. He'd lie there for the rest of the night refusing to go back to sleep. Now, he'd say he went back to sleep when I asked him in the morning, but I used to lie awake watching him, so I knew. I never had dreams like that. I only had lovely dreams. I used to dream about the times my dad used to bring me picking blackberries in the fields round here. Well, now that's before all the houses were built. This used to be all fields and farms then. My dad used to have a moped, an NSU quickly it was. It's like a motorbike, but with pedals. My sister Joan would sit on the handlebars, Anne would sit in the carrier, and I'd stand on a little platform over the engine. I was the only one that fitted there. I was the youngest and very, very small. We'd go over the bridge and up the back roads and pick blackberries to our heart's content. I used to eat most of the sweet blackberries I picked. I remember me hands and me clothes would be all purple. Me dad would come down and laugh at me. He'd say me nose was all purple and then he'd grab me nose and pretend he had it in his hand. He'd stick his thumb between his fingers and say it was me nose. I'd ask for it back and he'd laugh and stick it back on. Oh, he laughed a lot, my dad. We'd get back on the bike and go back home and me mam would make a pie from the berries and I'd get the first slice because I was the youngest. That's the sort of dreams I have.
Tim sits in detention with me. He was waiting outside for me, just standing there, so they let him come in and sit. He looks at a comic. The Beano is his favourite. Mine too. They don't let me read. They don't let me read a comic. They don't let me do anything. I just sit there. I look at the mountains in the distance. The forests. Hello, Hiawatha. My name is Johnny Running Deer. He raises his hand. Ugh, we are blood brothers. We run through the forest chasing rabbits with our bows and arrows. Then we come to the river. Our canoe sits there. We get in and paddle. The river leads down to a big lake. The sun speckles on the water, flashing. I see a fish jump. I hear a clattering sound. The blinds roll down, blocking me view of the mountains. The teacher glares at me. Goodbye, Hiawatha. I sit there, quietly. Just us and the teacher in the darkened room. The street is quiet when we get home. All the kids have gone in for their tea. A big car sits outside our house. I look in the window. It has deep plush seats and a diving cat on the bonnet. We knock on the door. I hear music playing. Ma answers. She smiles broadly. She has a cocktail in her hand and dances to the music. She has on a new dress. Never seen this dress. And her makeup. She's beautiful. My ma's very good looking and they say I take after her. I love it when people say that. She rubs me head, then turns and walks in the front room. Me and Tim follow her in. Tim's holding his teddy and he's still clutching his orange. He's there. A new man. He speaks in a strong country accent. He sounds like a policeman. He has a big fat belly that flops over his trousers, but wears a lovely suit and gold cufflinks in his shirt and a gold tie pin. He has a big gold watch and rings. I'm going to wear gold when I grow up. He drinks from a can. Have you anything to eat, he asks. We'll eat out later, she tells him. He smiles at him. He has yellow teeth. What's that you've got there, he asks him. Tim holds out the orange and smiles innocently. He takes the orange and tears it in two and bites into one half. Tim watches in horror and starts to cry. What's wrong with you? It's only an orange. Tim puts his head down and sobs, holding his teddy tightly. Don't worry, I'll get you another one. Ma comes in. Quiet, Timmy, sit down, shut up and watch some telly. Kevin and me are going upstairs. He takes off his jacket and loosens his tie. He grabs Ma and kisses her. He kisses her a long time. Makes me uncomfortable. It's not like when Mr. Murray kisses Mrs. Murray. I want to stop them. He's too rough. They go upstairs. Me and Timmy watch the telly. The news is on. We change the stations. The news is on all the stations. I don't like the news. It's boring. They're upstairs a long time. I'm hungry. Timmy lies in front of the telly. His head rests on the teddy. Do you want chips? I ask. He nods. Well, you can't tell anyone. He nods again. I go upstairs. Slowly. I'm outside the door. I can hear them making noise in the bedroom. Strange noises. I sneak back down the stairs. His jacket sits on the chair. I look in his pocket. Car keys and a dirty hanky. I look in his inside pocket. There it is. A big, fat wallet. I take it out and open it. He has photos in it. Mostly of himself with different women. He has cards in there. Kevin McMahon, car sales. Somewhere in Cork. We take one. And there it is, his money. And plenty of it. He wouldn't miss a fiver. I'm tempted to take 20. You get a lot of sweets for 20. And comics too. I put the 20 back and take the fiver. I tell Timmy to stay there and let me back in. The counter is high and shiny in the chipper. There's already a queue. I shout my order up at the Chinese girl. Two bags of chips. She puts extra chips in the fryer. They sizzle. I see Anto there. He's with his dad. He says he's getting a quarter pounder with cheese. I love a quarter pounder with cheese. I should have took the 20. Anto has Sky Sports. Says he's going to watch the match with his dad. I tell him we have the movie channel. He asks me which one. I say Nickelodeon. He says Nickelodeon shows cartoons. It doesn't show films. I don't know what to say. The girl calls two bags of chips. I pay the girl and turn to leave. Better get back before the film starts, sneers Anto.
All the women used to be out the front in the good weather when the football was on. All the men with their football and their bags of cans, and the women in the front gardens. I used to go out of boredom more than anything else. I used to feel out of place, especially when Mrs. Sugrue used to be out there, and she always was. We'd gather in her driveway and everyone would chat. All she'd talk about was her kids. My Alan did this and me Peter did that. I used to live through her in the beginning, seeing somehow that I had a share in her kids. She used to let her kids come into me when they were little. and they'd tell me how they were doing in school. Used to bake buns for them. They liked that. Then her husband got promoted. Assistant manager. Got a company car and all. She got more nosy and snobby. Started wondering what my fella worked at. She knew he was in the council, but now she wanted to know which section. She asked me one evening. I tried to dodge the question. Maintenance, I said. Sewers, I heard him say. He come up behind me on his way in from work. She looked shocked but said nothing. Why did he have to open his big mouth? Why? The next day her kids were in my garden and I brought them out some buns. She ran over to the wall. Oh, come on in now and have your dinner. We don't want you spoiling your dinner. She was in a fluster. But we already had our dinner, said Alan. Oh, that made her red in the face. Now, in yous come now, quickly. She helped them over the wall and I felt awful. I stood in the doorway, just out of sight, and I didn't want her to see me. She whispered to her kids. She thought I couldn't hear, but I did. Don't go in there, she said to them. You'd never know what you might catch. Well, I didn't know whether to go out to her or go inside. I felt so angry and so sad at the same time. Her kids had always played in my garden and they always ate my buns. I wanted to tell her that. But now her kids would never be in my garden again, no matter what I said. I went inside with the buns and, well, I looked at them. I wanted to cry. I went to put them in the bin. He came in to get another few cans from the fridge. What are you doing? I'll have them. He took one from the plate and he bit into it. Delicious, love, he said. I think he knew. I think he saw my face and he knew something. He took the whole plate off me and brought them in with him. You not having one? He shouted in at me. I went into him and I took one from the plate. We bit in at the same time. Go on, he said. Thought you were watching your weight, Toby. He winked at me. Bless him.
I walk up the street towards me road. I see older boys heading towards the lane with blue carrier bags full of cans. I tasted a can once when Ma was upstairs with one of our dads. It tasted bitter. Up ahead, some women talk in their front gardens. Mrs. Sheridan is there. She sees me coming. She smiles at me. I like Mrs. Sheridan. She's kind. One night when me and Tim were out playing in the cold, Mrs. Sheridan brought us in and gave us a bowl of stew. It was salty, but I liked it. So did Timmy. Mrs. Sheridan stared at us the whole time. When I'd look up at her, she'd smile at me. She said I was like an angel. Mrs. Sheridan is older than Ma. She's not beautiful like Ma, but she's very mammaly. She'd read the stories while Mr. Sheridan looked at football. I smiled at him, but he just kept watching telly. Mrs. Sheridan has no kids for us to play with, but she has children's storybooks. She says our Ma used to read her the same stories. Hello, Johnny, she says. She smiles at me. I say, hello.
We stand in her garden as usual. All the women are there. She's given it socks about her, Alan. He started college last summer. He's going out with a nice girl. Her dad's a solicitor. Lives in Fox Rock. Very nice. Long way from my garden and buns. Johnny comes down the road. Oh, he's a lovely kid. He's carrying a bag of chips. Mrs. Sugrue gives him a disapproving look and nods at the other women. Oh, there's jailbait, she says. All the other women give disapproving looks. I was missing a carton of milk the other morning, Mrs. O'Brien snaps. So was I, says Mrs. Sugrue. They grimace together. Poor little fella. He must be starving. I ask him what he's doing and to come down to me later. He smiles. He has an angel's smile. He says he will and he heads off. Ah, he's a good boy.
He's trouble. Mark my words, said Mrs. Sugrue. You shouldn't have anything to do with him.
The others all nod. Then they start to talk about his mother. Different men going in and out of the house at all hours, never without a drink in her hand. She fell out of the pub the other night. Oh, they're in their element now, bitching and backbiting. I don't like to listen. Then again, I do.
The other women look annoyed at me. Sometimes I take some of their milk for me and Timmy. They must have seen me. "Where's Tim?" she asks. "He's at home," I say. "I'm bringing him chips." "Aren't you the great lad looking after your brother?" I feel good when she says that. I feel like a man. "Do you want to come down to me later?" she asks. "I'll see what Tim says." Tim does want to go to bed. I made some lovely apple tart. I'm hooked. "See you later," I say. Timmy talks to his bear at the gate. He brightens up when he sees me. We sit on the wall. I share out the chips. A bag each and half the chips in the brown bag. Tim eats them quickly. I bite into a big one. I taste the salt. The vinegar buzzes on me tongue. Delicious. Me and Tim make short work of the chips and throw our bags on the ground. Tim swings his legs and smiles. My stomach feels warm. Ma comes out the door with Kevin. They bounce down the steps. "We're going out. Don't stay up late." They get in the car and speed away. Me and Timmy go in. I lock the front door. "Do you want to go down to Mrs. Sheridan's?" I ask. He nods. We leave the back door open. Tim smiles a relaxed smile and hugs little Johnny. We head down to Mrs. Sheridan and apple tart.
A beautiful looking woman, his mother. I see all the husbands stare at her when she sashays down the street. Even my fellow when he thinks I'm not looking. Beauty also attracts its own share of trouble, especially when you mix it with alcohol. She has lovely blonde hair, I say. Mrs. Sugrue always bleached her hair. She was originally a redhead. I can see her face go red. Her hackles are up. She's trying to think of something cutting to say. I can smell wood burning. I don't give her the chance. "Football's nearly over. I think I'll go in and bake a sponge." I quickly exit. I can hear them all thinking, "Look at your one. Who has she got to bake for?" I can hear the commentator for the football getting all excited. He must have the sound up full. I think he's going deaf. I turn on the oven to heat it up and put some eggs in the mixing bowl. The electric whisk hums. I think I hear something at the door. I'm not sure, all this noise. I go out and answer. There they are, my two little angels looking up at me. They hesitate at the door. I think they're waiting for me to smile. I do. And then they look relaxed. "Come in," I say. They come in, walking together, Tim hugging Johnny and his teddy. Johnny hears the football on the telly. "Do you have Sky Sports?" he says. "He's in watching it now," I say. "Go on in if you like. I'll bring in some apple tart." I turn to Timmy. "Would you like to help me bake a cake?" I ask him. "Can we eat it as well?" he asks. I laugh, and he smiles, an angel smile.
The room is dark and smoky. I sit on the carpet. It's warm and soft. He glances down at me, then goes back to watching the football. I move closer to his feet. He gives me an uncomfortable look and shifts in his chair. "So you like football then?" he asks. "I like United," I say. He smiles. "A United fan?" he says. "Well, they're better than Liverpool," I say. He taps me on the head with his newspaper. "So they are," he says. "So they are. Second half coming up now." Mrs. Sheridan comes in with the apple tart. "Watching the football together?" "He's a United fan. I'll have some of that cake too." She smiles at him, then smiles at me as she goes out the door. He doesn't seem to mind me sitting at his feet now. Are you enjoying that? I nod. Get that into you. Plenty more where that came from if I know my missus. The ads are over. He folds his legs and joins his hands. I fold my legs too. I feel like Anto. He's not the only one who can watch Sky Sports. I'll be able to tell him all about the match tomorrow. Bet he'd be sick. Or maybe he'd be glad. We'd be able to talk about the match together. Maybe he won't laugh at me anymore when I'm in trouble. Maybe he'll like me. Mr. Sheridan is all excited now. It's near the end of the match and they're level. Go on, he says. Cross it. He clenches his fist. I say, go on, too. He stands up. Shoot, he roars. Shoot. I roar too. The crowd on the telly roar as the ball crosses the line. Goal, we roar. We jump up and down all over the room. He grabs me arm and raises it in the air. It's like I scored the goal. We won. I'm a winner. We calm down. He laughs awkwardly. That's that, he says. The final whistle blows. The commentator comes on and asks a man in a suit a question. What would you know, barks Mr. Sheridan. He turns off the sound. Come on, he says to me, and he ushers me into the kitchen. Timmy sits at the table. He holds little Johnny and a new orange. He looks delighted with himself. Mrs. Sheridan hands Mr. Sheridan a mug of tea. He sups it and asks, where's mine? Mrs. Sheridan smiles and puts one on. Mr. Sheridan looks out the window into the back garden. God, it's dark out, he says. It must be way past your bedtime. I'll walk yous down when yous have finished your tea. And don't forget to pack them a bit of cake for tomorrow. We walk down the street in the dark. Mr. Sheridan goes to go in the gate, but I tell him we'll be grand here. He looks like he's thinking about this, but then seems to think it's okay. Up United, he says. Don't be afraid to call them when they're playing. Okay, I say. He watches as we go round the back. Then he heads off. I like Mr. Sheridan now. We go in the back door. The house is very quiet. Mam mustn't be home yet. It's cold compared to Mrs. Sheridan's house. Tim is tired. We go upstairs and bring our cake with us. We climb into the bed. Tim asks, can he sleep with me? We lie down, thinking of United and apple tart.
He's in bed first. He's always in bed first. He has to be up early in the morning. He says it's not that he's in bed first, but that I always go up after him. That I let him heat up the bed first. That he's no more than an electric blanket. Oh, even better, I say. You don't use up any electricity. He starts to nod off. Nice having kids around the house, I say. Good to have another United fan, he says. I think he likes you, I say. I think he likes your cake, he says. He drifts off. I lie there, aching. I have an ache for those kids. For any kids. I have so much love to give them. It's bursting out of me. I don't know how he can sleep. I try to wake him. He just murmurs. I lie there, staring out the window and at the rain hitting it.
It's raining this morning. There's no sign of Ma. Me and Tim eat the cake. He says he's thirsty. I tell him to drink water. He says he wants some milk. I tell him we've no milk. Why don't you eat the orange? He shakes his head and puts the orange in his pocket. He says he wants milk. He gets whiny. It's early. I go out the front door and head down towards Mrs. Sugrew's. She always has plenty of milk. And there it is, 6 cartons of milk. I sneak in our gate. Quick look up and down. All clear. I lift a carton. The hall door opens. It's Mrs. Sugrew in her curlers. She looks surprised, then angry. I run. She's after me. I drop the carton. It bursts open on the ground. I'm going to report you, she screams as I run down the road. Tim's at the door, waiting. He sees I've no milk. He looks disappointed. I run inside and lock the door. Mrs. Sugrue is coming, I tell him. He goes in and hides under the table. I go upstairs and sneak a look out the window. No sign of Mrs. Sugrue. I wait a while. Still no sign. Tim comes up to me. I'm hungry, he says. We look out at the rain. It's easing off. I look at the front door of the supermarket. The security man isn't there. I go in. Bring Tim with me. No one would suspect Tim. We stand at the fridge. I hand Tim the milk. Put that under your jumper, I tell him. He does. I look around. No one has noticed. I go for a packet of chocolate Kimberley. That will go nicely with the milk. No one looking and under the jumper. We head for the door. Just a few steps away and we're free. Biscuits for lunch. I feel the giant hand on my shoulder. Run, Tim. Run. A woman grabs him. We sit in the security office. There are lots of television screens on a wall. They can see the whole shop. The biscuits and milk sit in a basket in front of us. The security guard makes a big deal about them to the manager, like they're real important. I look at the screens. All the people shopping. Tim's hair is drying off. Goes all curly when he's been in the rain. He holds his teddy tightly and says he wants to go home. It'll be a while before we get home. The police come in. The man just speaks to them. Then they come over to us. The woman cop looks stern. The man smiles. We better be getting you master criminals home, he says. We drive through the rain. The wipers are noisy. I'll be mad when we get home. The woman cop knocks on the door for ages. There's no one there. Ma's not home yet. She gets in the car, says something about social services. We sit in the station. The phone keeps ringing. The smiling cop fills out a form asking us our names. Tim won't tell him. He's afraid. He won't talk to anyone. He hugs his teddy and buries his face in me side. The priest comes in. He goes over to the sergeant. The sergeant points over to us. He comes over. Hello, Jimmy, he says. Johnny, I say. Ah, yes, sorry, Johnny. You seem to have got yourself into a spot of bother. I nod. Tim was hungry, I say. Right, so when will your mammy be home? I shrug my shoulders. Where is your mammy? I tell him I don't know. He thinks about this. A woman comes in, young, tired looking. She comes straight over to us, starts filling out a form. She looks at the form the smiling cop filled out. The priest asks where we're going. St. Patrick, she says. She gets up and takes me hand. Could you not get them foster homes, the priest asks. She asks him, does he know any? He hangs his head.
Mondays are good. For me, anyway. I clean the altar with the other women. Father Richie's always delighted with the work we do. I arrange the flowers. I did a course at it in night classes one year. Father Richie saw my hanging basket outside my door and was full of praise for it. I was so proud. He asked me would I do it for the church. How could I refuse? He has a way with people, Father Richie. I don't think he should have been a priest, really. I arranged the lilies. He keeps looking over at me. He looks perplexed. I wonder, am I doing a good job or what? I smile at him. He comes over. I wonder, could I talk to you for a moment? I nod. Seems very serious. You know the Hannigan brothers, he asks. You mean little Johnny and Timmy? Yes, he says. I've been looking for a temporary foster home for them. It'll be just for a little while. I thought you might know somebody. Did I? I can't believe it. I have a chance to have two beautiful kids. I'd be interested, I say. Would you? Yes. And how would your husband feel about this? Leave him to me, I say.
The building is old, with a big statue of an angel out front. Her car pulls up outside the front gate. We go up to the door. She rings the bell. Tim is scared. A buzzer sounds. We go in. The door locks behind us. We go through another buzzer door. It locks behind us. A very tall man dressed like a priest comes out of an office. He talks to the tired woman. She hands him some papers and leaves. He says his name is Brother Martin. Johnny, is it? He asks. I nod. The other boys come down a hallway and up the stairs. One of them stops and stares at us. He's a tough-looking boy, a bit older than me. What a good-looking boy you are, Johnny, says Brother Martin. He holds out a sweet. The boy at the bottom of the stairs shakes his head frantically. I shake my head. Brother Martin looks disappointed. He looks over at the bottom of the stairs to see what I'm looking at. The boy turns to go up the stairs. Christy, he shouts. The boy stops and turns. He signals him to come over. Christy looks a bit afraid. Show them to the dorm, Christy. Tim can sleep with you for tonight, but he'll have to sleep with the younger boys from then on. Christy gives us the nod. We follow him up the stairs. He says everyone calls him Gitzer. He says not to take sweets from Brother Martin. Then he thinks you owe him. It's lights out at 10. Me and Tim climb into the bed. It creaks. It's hard and has dips in it. Gitzer says he'll show us round in the morning. The lights go out. Tim snuggles into me back. I can hear other boys coughing. It's late. Everyone is asleep. I lie there wondering when Mam will come and collect us. Brother Martin comes in quietly. He checks that everyone is asleep. He comes over to me. He has a strange look on his face. He rubs me on the head. He asks me how I'm settling in. I shrug my shoulders. You're a good-looking boy, he says. He strokes my head like I'm a cat. I push his hand away. He looks angry. He says Tim can't stay there the night. He'll have to go in with the juniors. He wakes Tim and takes him by the arm. Tim is still half asleep. Takes Tim's teddy. Says he's too old for one, that they're not allowed. Tim roars, crying. He looks back at me as he's dragged out the door. He calls me, Johnny, Johnny. I go to get out of the bed. I hear someone hissing. I look over. It's Gitzer. He shakes his head. I lie back down. Gitzer gives me the thumbs up. I lie awake in the dark. I hear Tim in the other room. He cries all night till well after the sun comes up.
I call him at work. Tell him to get off immediately. It's an emergency. We collect him in Father Richie's car. He has the hump about taking the day off, but the sewers will survive one day without him. I explain the situation to him with the help of Father Richie. He hesitates, but I give him the look and whisper to him angrily, I want these kids. We better go and collect them, so, he says. Father Richie brings us to an old dilapidated office and up to the desk of a tired-looking young woman. She fills out a form. What do you work at? She asks. I kick him under the desk as he goes to answer. I work for the council. A good steady job, I take it? He nods. She explains to us about Fosterton. We agree to everything. Then she explains to us about the money. I don't want money, I say. He kicks me under the table. You get it anyway, says the social worker. The phone rings. She answers it. She seems serious. She stares at us as she talks, as if she's including us. We have somewhere for him now, she says.
It's Sunday. We all go to Mass. Everyone's quiet. We all stand to attention when the priest talks. He winks at me when I get communion. He smiles like he remembers me. Tim wants communion, but the priest tells him he's too young. The priest rubs his head and says, next year. We go back to our seat. We kneel and sit when Gitzer does. He even knows some of the words. Gitzer is excited. He says today is a special day. We all go to the mountains on a bus. It's not all bad, I think. Tim asks when we can go home. After the mountains, I tell him. I'm in a daze. I've never been to the mountains. We climb up the steps to the bus. It's high. Gitzart, Tim and me sit down the back. We can look out the back windows. Brother Martin says prayers all the way to the mountains. He expects us all to join in. And the first sorrowful mystery, he says. I'm tired. I didn't have much sleep last night with the crying. Sorrowful me whole. What would he know about it? Gitzart tells us jokes about elephants. I don't understand them, but I laugh anyway. The bus stops at a place called Glendalough. It has two lakes and trees and mountains. Brother Martin tells us it was a monastic site. It starts to go on about St. Kevin. We get off the bus as he drones on. Me and Gitzer run and run, galloping through the grass. I put my hands up as we run under the trees. They hit the lower branches. I'm running there. We barrel into the lake. It's cold, but we don't care. We splash one another. Our clothes are soaking. We lie in the long grass looking at Brother Martin with the younger kids. Gitzer takes a cigarette from his sock. He lights up and passes it to me. I take a drag. We choke a bit. Gitzer laughs. I pass it back to him. Brother Martin goes over to Tim. He talks to him a bit. Then he offers him a sweet. Tim takes it. Fuck, says Gitzer. You have to get him away from here. How, I ask. Ma wouldn't leave us here if she knew. I need Ma. I've got to find Ma. I look at the card in me pocket. An address in Cork. You can come it, says Gitzer. Brother Martin rings a bell. The boys get back on the bus. Not me. I'm out walking the road. Tumming. A car stops. It has a trailer with pigs in it. I run up to it. There's an old couple in it. They smile at me. Where are you going, I ask. Enniscorthy, they say. That's where me mam is, I say. I jump in the back. I tell them I was camping with friends. They're staying on a few more days, so I'm going down to me ma. I tell them I love pigs. The man is delighted. He tells me all about the pigs. They give me a big bacon sandwich. I'm a bit sad leaving them in Enniscorthy. I spot a sign there. It says Cork, Waterford. I see the garage at the end of the street. I see Kevin come out, and there she is. Like a film star. Big floppy hat and a smile. I smile. Ma! I call her. Well, she doesn't hear me. I call her again. Ma! Her and Kevin get in a car. The engine roars. I run to them. Ma, they have Timmy! The brothers, Ma! They close the door and pull off. I chase after them. Ma, we've got to save Timmy. Please, Ma. I love you, Mammy. Mammy! Mammy! We tumble. The car turns a corner. She's gone. I make my way over to the path. I don't know where to go. I see a hall door open. A kid comes out on a tricycle. He's all curls and freckles. His mum and dad come out after him. His dad looks at him. That dadly look. The kid comes down the path. He looks at me. He looks scared. He's afraid of me. He stops. You go away, he says. Me? Daddy, make him go away. This little kid has a mummy and a daddy. He has everything and he wants me gone. The little fucker. I walk towards him. He gets off the tricycle and runs. I grab the tricycle and swing it round and round. I hit a car with it. The light breaks. I feel a pain in the back of my head. I fall to the ground. I see his dad standing over me. He kicks me in the stomach. I'm winded. I roll on the ground, gasping for breath. I roll and gasp and cry.
We pull up outside a big building. We all go in. A tall man in a soutane comes out. The social worker calls him Brother Martin. He listens patiently. He says he'd like to keep Tim one more day. They argue. I see Tim through the open door in the office. I go in. He's happy to see me. My fella follows me in. Tim smiles at him as he pops a sweet in his mouth. He smiles back. He said I could have the bag of sweets if I touch his Mickey. Everyone stares in the door. Who? I say. Brother Martin, smiles Tim. The whole packet. Brother Martin rushes in. That's a filthy lie. He grabs Tim and shakes him. Take it back. My fella heads to the door. Too much for him. Can't handle it. He grabs the door handle and closes it. He turns. He has the fire in his eyes and not a football in sight. Brother Martin goes flying over the desk with the force of the punch. We better go outside, says the social worker. We bring Tim outside and stand in the hall. There's a lot of banging coming from the office. Stand by the bed! I hear him roaring. Now I know what it means. I cling to Tim. The social worker and Father Richie stare at one another. No one saw anything, she says. This'll in no way prejudice your case, she says. The noise in the office quietens. He comes out. He looks different. Like hope is beginning in his big heart. I run to him and I kiss him on the mouth. It's a long, hard kiss. He looks at me surprised. I hope too. I hope he won't have the dreams anymore.
I sit in the station listening to the guards. Me head and tummy are sore. The guards talk about God. One guy says there is no God, it's all to control us. The other says something about a little red book and asks does he really want to be a cop. The sergeant asks me do I think there is a God. There might be, but he doesn't live at St. Patrick's. They go quiet and stared at me except for one. He says I'll be going to Letter Frack. They'll teach me about God there. Seems angry. He says there'll be no more running away. I can hear loads of shouting at the desk. Drunk men fighting. The sergeant rubs me head. I know, he says. We'll put you in the old office and when the vanguard comes on duty, she'll sit with you and tell you stories. Huh? Won't that be nice? I frown. He picks up a carrier bag and brings me into an old office. It has a chair and a big desk which he sits on and a long light which keeps flickering. The sergeant reaches into his bag and takes out a big flask. He unscrews the cup at the top and gives it to me. Then he takes out the cork and pours me out a cup of thick red soup. Tomato, he says. My favourite. My wife made that. None of your packet stuff in here. He smiles. The noise outside gets louder. Someone shouts for him. "I'll be back to you in a minute," he says. He turns and goes out the door. I look around. There's a big reading lamp on the desk. It shines brightly. We stare at it a while. Gitza told me about Letter Frack. It's a horrible place. Tim won't be sent there. Just me. I saw it on the telly once. A man broke a bulb and held the wires. I wonder, does it hurt much? My hands are shaking. I reach for the lamp. My shaky hands knock the lamp over. It knocks the sergeant's bag and flask onto the floor. There's soup everywhere. An orange rolls out of the bag and lands at my feet. An orange?
No one speaks on the trip down to Cork, except Tim. He talks all the time. He asks about Johnny. He asks, will he be living at our house? He asks, can we bake some cakes? He talks and talks and talks. Then as we get near Cork, he falls asleep. Everyone else in the car is on a mission. We know what we have to do and we're doing it. He seems different. It's like he's filled with grace from God. As if he's reborn. I've heard of people being reborn, but never knew what it meant. We stop outside the police station. There's a lot of commotion. People handcuffed, struggling as they're dragged screaming through the door. "You better stay here," he says. "No, we're doing this together." "Right so," he says, and takes Timmy's hand. "Wait," says Timmy. He reaches into his pocket and takes out an orange and hands it to him. "You mind that? I want to share it with Johnny." Timmy smiles an angel smile. He smiles back at him. We all march forward to get our Johnny.
That was No Room for Angels by Arthur Sheridan, with Keelan Dunn as Johnny and Angela Harding as Mrs. Sheridan. Sound supervision was by Richard McCulloch, and the play was produced by Aidan Matthews.